You are listening to The Pilgrim on the 405 with Will Crist. Join him as he and his guests discover how businesses thrive in California.
Well, welcome. Welcome to Pilgrim on the 405. And we have brought to the studio today an old friend from 5 years ago. Ryan Huff is going to tell us a little bit about the progress that he's made from that 5 years ago when we first met him and had him on an earlier show of the Pilgrim on the 405 as he was starting off down this path of thriving in California with Cirrus Insight. So welcome, Ryan.
Thank you, Will. Happy to be here.
Yeah, it's been a nice time. From time to time, we've gotten together. Tell me a little bit about Cirrus Insight.
Yeah, so we are a small software company based here in Irvine. I think of ourselves as a startup, despite the fact that we launched about 5 years ago. And today we have 60 employees. Our offices are split between here in Irvine, where I have my development team, and in Knoxville, Tennessee, actually, where my co-founder runs sales, marketing, and our support team. So kind of two offices there. But we build product that salespeople use to help them close more deals. We have an integration for Salesforce.com that plugs into Gmail, Outlook, your mobile device, and really just helps you get more done in the day. Helps, honestly, make using your CRM a lot easier. So you have to spend less time entering that stuff in at the end of the week, and hopefully you have fewer things slip through the cracks and better visibility to what your customers are doing and how your pipeline is.
That's great. I've been using Cirrus Insight for 5 years. You mentioned earlier that I was one of the first people.
You were,
right? Yeah.
Yeah, we launched at the end of 2011, and I think you were using Cirrus Insight even before that.
Right. So, that's right.
Yeah, in the single digits, I think.
That's right. Well, I've got to say, in addition to the integration between Gmail and Salesforce, things like book a meeting, mm-hmm. The templates, also the ability to have a campaign, all of those are wonderful things to help salespeople. They've certainly helped me a lot. I am always impressed to see who has opened my email because it tells me where we are in the process.
Yeah, there's a lot of powerful things that you can do as a salesperson, a lot of tools that you can have in that tool belt. We try to bring as many of those things to you and make those available to you. And, you know, like you said, make it easier to book a meeting and raise it to your awareness when somebody responds to an email and you need to get back to them. And just some things that sometimes we take for granted, but putting the right package really helped to make you a lot more effective.
All right. That's right. Well, so tell me a little bit, how did you come across having a co-founder in another state all the way across the country?
Yeah, I get that question a lot. So Brandon, my co-founder, he and I went to UCSB together. And we were, you know, best friends through college. He and I were kind of two peas in the pod that liked to put business plans together and things like that. And you know, we took it very seriously back then, but looking back, it's kind of quaint. But you know, and I don't think we haven't put a business plan together per se for our current business. You know, we've kind of taken the adage to heart that, you know, by the time you're done writing that it's out of date. So, you know, as a small startup software company, we try to move fast and try to make decisions quickly with the information we have. And, you know, we've been pretty successful so far with that approach.
Well, tell me a little bit about what has been your experience in doing business in Southern California.
So I grew up in Southern California. I grew up down here in Irvine, went to school in Santa Barbara, moved up to the Bay Area for a little while after college, and then moved back down to be with my family and my wife's family. So Southern California is literally in my blood. And for me, it wasn't so much a choice as it just was. That was the way it was going to be. And, you know, my co-founder, for instance, you know, he he grew up in California as well, but life took him in a different direction. He was in Tennessee when we started this thing up, and that was kind of the default decision there as well. And at one point we had ideas of bringing the team back out here to California, but that too worked out well to keep that team there. But yeah, I mean, Southern California has just been my home, and that's where I was going to start it. You know, even though a lot of things were happening up in Silicon Valley, still are, of course. But I think we see that Southern California is really growing up and developing, especially in my space of tech. There's a lot happening and a lot of opportunities there, a lot of resources available to us. You don't have to be in Silicon Valley and spending ungodly amounts of money on employees, on homes, on, you know, just everything up there. So, you know, I grew up here and I love building this company here.
Well, so tell me a little bit about what the advantages are, the resources that are available to people here in Southern California.
I think, number one, it's a great place to live. It's a great place to build a family. I myself have two young kids. I couldn't imagine trying to raise our kids in a really urban environment like San Francisco. A lot of people do it, and a lot of people raise great kids there. But for us, it was just a really clear decision that this is where we wanted to live. So that was one thing, just kind of the lifestyle in general. But, you know, we are right in the middle of a lot of great schools. Our employees are drawn from UCI, from Cal State Fullerton, from Cal State Pomona, a couple from San Luis Obispo. You know, so there's a ton of people out there who have the skills we need to help build this company. And a lot of other people have seen that as well, and they've built their companies here. We've got a lot of really big tech companies. We've got a lot of really big companies overall, and of course that helps to grow the pool of experienced resources that we can pull from. So, you know, when I see students that I speak to at UCI or Chapman, and a lot of times I'll hear that they're working on a startup idea and they're really excited about it, and I think that's amazing. But they're, in their mind, the next step for them is to move up to Silicon Valley. And, you know, we all enjoy the Silicon Valley show on HBO and see those, the antics ensue, but we also see what happens on TechCrunch, and I think a lot of people think that that is just the way it's done and the way it has to be done. And so my message to students a lot of times when I'm speaking to them, I try to leave it with the idea that, hey, look, you can do this anywhere. You don't have to be in Silicon Valley. You can do it wherever your feet are. And at the moment, they're in Southern California. You know, that's a really great place to do it. So hopefully I've converted a couple people, but never stop trying.
Well, tell me a little bit about the resources. I mean, in terms of tech space, office space, things mm-hmm. like that.
Yeah. You know, your office here in tech space in Costa Mesa, when I started my previous company, actually a consulting company, I started my office in a similar kind of shared office space, a Regis space. And we, you know, I ran that company from there. And then when I started up this company, I had that same space and moved from office to office on that same floor about three different times until we had the biggest office on the floor, which was a really exciting milestone until we burst past that. And then, you know, needed to find a quote-unquote real office. So, and then we proceeded to grow past that, and we knocked the wall down and moved into the space adjacent to it. So yeah, Orange County, of course, has a thriving real estate business, so there's never any shortage, at least as I've seen, resources like that.
All right, so we have an abundance of commercial real estate, and it goes all the way from finding a place with an attorney who happens to have an extra office with a conference room at low rent, to places like Regis, the executive office space, into plenty of available spaces around.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I focus on tech, but my my office in the Regis building was surrounded by lawyers, by psychologists, by insurance brokers. Everybody. And walking around this space, I see the same type of thing. Every type of business you can imagine, people hanging a shingle out in the hall and inviting their customers into, you know, a really nice and professional and clean environment with all the, you know, typical resources that you'd need in order to run your business as well.
So let's talk about building that business. Talk to me about resources that are available here. I mean, certainly one way of doing it is hiring a lot of people. I mean, that would be going venture capital, getting a pot full of money, and then hiring a lot of people.
Sure.
But that's not necessary, right?
Yeah, I think everybody's different. You certainly can do a lot of outsourcing these days. I personally have had a mixed experience with software development outsourcing, but yeah, I mean, there's everything from software development outsourcing to kind of virtual assistants, right? To rather than have somebody sitting at a reception desk in your office, now that's, you know, in the quote unquote cloud, as it were. So there's a lot of resources like that available. And, you know, I have a lot of colleagues that take advantage of that and have made it a really kind of important part of how they operate their business. I personally wanted to take a different approach. And everybody who works on the product is a full-time employee of ours. They sit with me in my office, and you know, we're drawing up on the whiteboard and doing design sessions and things like that. So it was important to me to be able to find people who had those skills, and quite frankly, to be able to do it on a budget that worked for us, which in Southern California is not easy to do. But I think, you know, we're a bootstrapped startup. We've raised a little bit of money from angel investors, primarily friends and family, but we are very much customer funded. And so we don't have VC money flown out of our ears that we can just throw at every employee that walks by and pay exorbitant salaries that we would have to pay up in San Francisco and the Bay Area. But obviously it's not cheap. Anybody who's ever hired anybody out here can tell you that. And so we've tried to compensate for that by building a culture around the company that really helps to put everybody who sits in a seat in a position to make decisions, to be part of really the company we're trying to build. And I think being based here in Orange County, I like to think that that's a contributing factor, that, you know, in a little way, everybody in the company kind of appreciates that, you know, we're doing this in their backyard. You know, folks that are raising their families in Ladera Ranch and Irvine and Costa Mesa, you know, can do that and still work for an exciting startup.
Tell me a little bit about the other companies that you know, when you said some of your colleagues out there. What are some of the other exciting things that you've seen?
So I've been in the Salesforce space for about 8 years. So my recent experience is really kind of focused in that niche of an area. But, you know, I have a lot of friends that run software companies that build other products for Salesforce.com. A lot of friends who have built and grown Salesforce consulting practices. So, you know, the teams that they have are, in some cases, distributed. Most of them have their workforce in the U.S. I think a couple of them have resources that they pull from overseas. But I think especially in this day and age of, you know, virtual meetings and video conferencing and things like that. It's never been easier to be able to run that kind of company. So, you know, I think it's something that we're growing into and will continue to grow into, and will, I think, what was a competitive advantage a couple of years ago, if somebody could take advantage of that, will just be commonplace and will be required for companies to really be adept at as they're growing their company.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about what kinds of issues you've had to deal with. I don't know. Maybe it's because you have a big part of your development team in Knoxville, or maybe it's because of having to negotiate the constraints that a lot of people talk about in California.
So I would say, for one, that we don't, our salaries for our software developers are not at the top of the list, right? If you were to rank other software startups in LA and certainly in San Francisco, our salaries aren't up there. I would say they're average, but it's still a very competitive space. So when we're trying to recruit, we're always competing against other companies who are trying to hire the same person. And so, like I said, it comes back to the intangibles that we've tried to develop with the company that go back to the company culture and really, at least for us, focusing on what that individual can contribute and what that contribution will mean both to them and to our customers. Because I think a lot of, you know, all of our employees are really driven, and the ones that I think are most successful are able to see how their daily contributions help our customers get more done in the day, right? And so in the last couple months, we've really made an effort to take some of the kind of unspoken values and the beliefs that we hold to in the company and put those on paper and, you know, really get verbal and visual buy-in across the company to those same values. So trying to make sure that everybody buys into that and sees that their contributions are really valuable.
So tell me a little bit about those values.
Sure. So like I said, we build a product that is primarily for salespeople, generally for anyone who is customer facing, but anybody who is communicating with customers using the Salesforce as your CRM, and as such, we really need to build that or encourage empathy with all of our employees, not just those in customer service, for instance, or those on the sales side, but especially our developers who are building tools for salespeople. And so one of our core values is really just understanding what salespeople have to do in their day. As a country, we all have a rather jaded view of salespeople in general. But, you know, we try to encourage that idea that, you know what, sales is really hard. And salespeople work hard as a result. And, you know, sales, I think, at least can be a very noble profession. You know, that was one line that I remember from my sales training, is that, you know, salespeople are a good salesperson is somebody who can help somebody solve a problem that they are experiencing. And so if we can help that salesperson achieve that, then we're doing our job. And so that's something that we try to really encourage and to help people that come on board understand. That's not something that I think most people just intrinsically feel. So, you know, we have to help them understand that and bring them, indoctrinate them, as it were, as they start working for us.
Good. Well, we're going to take a little time till the break here and hear from the people who are sponsoring our show here, who equally are looking to solve problems for people who have those problems.
Hi, it's time for another tip from Sandler Training. Traditional sales training teaches techniques on how to eliminate stalls and objections. Some are fancy sales moves, while others are programmed responses. Sales is a conversation, and I don't know how you can memorize every possible response for every sales situation. Also, the prospect has usually heard these responses before and has been turned off by some fancy sales move. When you really think about it, the only person qualified to address the stall or objection is the prospect. Ask the right questions, and you will eliminate stalls and objections. And that's another tip from Sandler Training, finding power through reinforcement.
Does your company need more than basic financial transactions? Are you holding your business back with your entry-level accounting software? When your business starts to grow, and it will, you'll need more security, features, and functionality. Well, let me introduce you to Gravity Software. Gravity Software's online accounting solution is written on the Microsoft CRM platform. No more islands of information. Financials and CRM are fully integrated and in the cloud. Gravity's goal is to fill the gap between entry-level accounting software like QuickBooks and complex and expensive enterprise applications. Gravity Software, simply innovative business management. Learn more at go-gravity.com.
And now back to Will and his guest.
Well, we've been talking with Ryan Huff, the founder and CEO of Cirrus Insight. And Cirrus is one of those pieces of software that makes a connection between two powerful pieces of software, Salesforce.com, Gmail, Outlook, or other contact programs. So, Ryan, you're looking up to see when I got started in with you guys?
Yeah, like I said, it was you were one of our very first beta customers. My guess is, I'm trying to look it up right now. My guess is it at least in the top 50, yeah. In the first 50.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's been a long time,
yes,
since you've been on board, and certainly have always appreciated that.
Yeah, well, and I certainly have recommended it to lots of people because Salesforce is a wonderful, wonderful device for managing customer relationships, and you can certainly do lots of things with it, but sometimes it can be a little overwhelming and complicated. Mm-hmm. And then also when you're trying to live in either Gmail or Outlook, then Salesforce can become become a distraction, and
yeah.
So this simple way of connecting the two, I think, is just an inspiration. I think that was a wonderful thing that you've done.
Well, we like to think of it as avoiding or combining multiple screens. So avoiding what I call a third screen. A lot of times, you know, you've got your inbox. You can't get away from that. You've got Salesforce.com open in another browser. And then, you know, in the last few years especially, we've all seen a proliferation in the tools that are available for salespeople. A lot of really powerful tools that do a lot of really different things. And so there have been countless different apps out there that have solved different problems for different types of sales teams. And the result has been companies and sometimes sales reps individually selecting multiple tools. In addition to Salesforce.com, you've got, you know, sometimes a half a dozen other tools that you're using to solve different problems that you as a salesperson experience, and that becomes overwhelming. And so what we try to do is starting with just Salesforce.com, how do we make that experience easier? If you're in your inbox all day long, if you're talking with customers all day long, bring that CRM experience to your inbox where you're, you know, communicating and collaborating with your customers, and help you do that all in one space. So you've got not three screens, but one screen. And then in the last 5 years, what we've been trying to do is not only make that connection to Salesforce better, but also bring in other tools, like you mentioned, booking a meeting, email tracking, email templates, and a lot of other really cool things that we're working on right now, bringing them all into that one screen and really helping you maybe cross off a few of those solutions that you've had to elect independently and have one tool that can do a lot of things.
Right. Well, I think that's really important to get a set of tools. And I know working with salespeople, they're always looking for ways to save time, to also to save on the emotional investment that they have to make to get through things. I mean, it takes a commitment to keep on target and to keep filling out the information that's necessary, put in reminders, fill in notes.
It takes a lot of discipline.
Send out thank you emails, respond, all of those things do take a lot of discipline. And any kind of tools that we can find to help that become more transparent, to move more efficiently, more effectively, I think that's really important. Now, tell me a little bit about one of the things that I have begun to discover is that people in California, businesses need to be very, very effective and efficient, and sometimes two or three times more effective and more efficient than somebody in Omaha, simply because of the constraints that are here. Is that
sure?
Have you found that to be true?
Yes. I mean, we've had the serendipitous benefit of having our team in Knoxville. And originally when we started the company, we thought we'd bring the team out to California, but then we realized that it was wonderful having a team out there that was, fantastic, well-educated. We've got a great group of really motivated and entrepreneurial in a lot of ways people out there coming out of like University of Tennessee, Maryville College, and that's been wonderful. That doesn't, because I want to have my development team within arm's reach, that team hasn't necessarily, we haven't tried to take advantage of Knoxville's resources, and we've had to build that internally. And as with any small business, we always have to make decisions as to where we want to invest our money. Do we have to expand to a bigger office, or can we take that money and, hire a new developer that helps us get more done and get a better product out? And can we maybe, some of my employees, if they're listening, might laugh about this, but maybe cram them into a corner somewhere so that we can maybe eke out a little bit longer in the space that we're in. It's constantly a decisions that we have to make about the constrained resources.
Are there particular constraints in doing business in California that you've discovered?
Sure. It's no secret that California is legislatively perhaps more difficult to work in than other states. I've heard it referred to as the Republic of California. I would just say it is what it is. It's part of the package. And like I said, California, Southern California is part of my blood, and it wasn't really a calculated decision that we were going to build the company here. It was just where we were going to do it. And so we've made do. We have to pay state income tax here in California. My team out in Knoxville doesn't. So that's pretty nice for them. But at the same time, I'm not going to be relocating to Knoxville. I love it here, and we've built a great team around it. So
hard to surf in Knoxville.
It is. They've got a lot of great, wonderful lakes out there, a lot of awesome boating opportunities. But, yeah, it's hard to give up Laguna Beach.
Yes, absolutely. Now, tell me a little bit about what plans for the future. What kinds of things do you see coming down?
So we have, I would say, the first 5 years, 4.5 years of our life has really been built for growth. We've taken almost every dollar that we've earned and put it into hiring. And so we've grown pretty quickly to 60 employees. Actually, I was about to divulge something I'm not allowed to. We're on a list, I'll just say that, pretty fast-growing companies. So I think the next chapter is that, we've grown the company. We've got the growth resources that we need. And so, now we're going to be operating more for profit and longevity than really putting every dollar back into salaries for new employees. So, we're at the very beginning of that stage, but that's some of what we're planning for the next couple of years.
Well, now you mentioned to me that you have spent time talking with young entrepreneurs from mm-hmm. Chapman and Fullerton and places like that. What kinds of things do you tell them?
I can't profess to be an expert. I've started two companies here. They've both been successful in their own way. But I think there's always hard work that goes into it, and that is, I don't know, I've been lucky so far. But I would say, I try to take what I've learned and share that with folks that I'm mentoring or kids that I speak to at school. So, you mentioned at the beginning my co-founder, and how did I end up with a co-founder in Tennessee? And again, it was one of those decisions that just seemed right at the time. In hindsight, I certainly wouldn't ever do this again without a partner. It's just, I can't imagine having to do what we do without having that support there 24/7. So it was one of those decisions that really wasn't a decision at the time, but I'm really glad it ended up going the way it did. As far as, getting office space and things along those lines, there are a lot of resources now that are available that I think were probably just becoming available at the time, but are a lot more visible spaces, like Tech Space here, Regis Office Space. But there are a lot of, again, in our space, in the tech startup space, there are a lot of incubators that are springing up all over Orange County that are amazing resources to have as you're getting up off the ground. As far as people who are just getting started with their careers, I've had the opportunity to talk a few times to people who are going through the tech boot camps, the coding boot camps, where, somebody might come from a, real estate background, but just have the itch to get involved with a startup, to maybe they've got their own idea and they want to know how to get it started. They want to learn how to start coding, and they've taken a really brave leap to put everything else on hold and spend 10, 12 weeks in a tech boot camp, learn how to code from the ground up, and by the end of it, they're able to get an app up and running. So I talked to a lot of kids there, and I think it's a lot of the same learnings apply to them as those that are coming out of, computer science programs like UCI and Pomona. But I don't think anything ever trumps blood, sweat, and tears. And I see a lot of that in the entrepreneurial programs at UCI, at the Cove, things like that. And that's really exciting to see.
So you mentioned the Cove. What other programs like that have you found that be helpful for people?
So I'm most familiar with the Cove. I can't recall the program at Chapman. It's the entrepreneurial program at Chapman University. But I've been there a couple times and seen a lot of great speakers speaking to folks there about their areas of expertise and having, you know, bringing in some amazing speakers that can really speak to how to navigate the VC world, if that's what your thing is, or, you know, how to outsource effectively, things like that. But I think, you know, those are some of the resources that I wish I had been aware of or perhaps existed at the time that I was starting this up, that today's entrepreneurs are very fortunate to have available to them. Another group, young entrepreneurs at UCI, is the Blackstone group, I believe it's called. These are generally students at UCI who have an idea and really have just this need to see it out. And they have mentors there. They can speak to other like-minded students who, you know, want to start a startup. And really that goes back to how Brandon and I started this. And it's really encouraging and inspiring to see that kind of thing springing up out of schools.
Well, who were mentors for you?
You know, I'd be remiss if I didn't say my parents to begin with. So each of my parents actually at different times of their life started their own company. My stepdad had a company in Orange that, you know, went from zero to, at its peak, 900 employees at one time over the western half of the United States. And that was, both my stepdad as well as all my parents have just been, you know, huge inspiration there and seeing that. So, you know, from about as early as I can remember, I always just wanted to start my own company. My wife was really instrumental in kind of kicking my butt to get off. You know, I was actually laid off from a company down here in Irvine back in 2008. My wife was the one who encouraged me and said, "Hey, look, no time like the present. We got to get this thing, you know, we got to pay our mortgage. We got to clothe our kids. Time for you to make some more money." And she said, "You know, I know this has always been a dream of yours," and supported me through some really tough times and getting that going. So yeah, I think that's been it. I try to read a lot, and there are a lot of, you know, tech luminaries that are very inspiring. So, you know, and I try to tell my kids about that kind of stuff, you know, what Elon Musk is doing and things along those lines, so that they grow up with that same kind of wanderlust.
Well, Sue, who else in addition to Elon Musk would you say that you hitch your wagon to their star?
You know, I think it's kind of a conglomeration of different personalities. I would say that I'm an Elon Musk fan. I'm probably, you know, I'm a big Apple fanboy, but I don't really, I wouldn't list, I mean, Steve Jobs is amazing and all of that, but I think in a different way, at least to me, than Musk and some of his contemporaries. So, you know, I think some of the people who have been really successful in the tech space, Jason Lemkin is one that I read a lot about. He was the founder of a digital signature company called EchoSign that was sold to Adobe. You know, I find Quora, a Q&A site, an amazing resource. Jason Lemkin is prolific on Quora and has been really successful in kind of building a brand around himself, around what he learned, and he subsequently became a really successful VC. So a lot of resources there that I like to point people to when I'm talking to them. And so I'd say just go there and troll through Quora and find people who have experience in areas that you're trying to find answers to. Daily basis, I'm there and I'm trying to learn what others have learned from their mistakes.
Well, you mentioned sales. You mentioned back in your sales training. Where were you trained?
So I would. My formal sales career was relatively short, but I had the opportunity to go through sales training with, I'm not sure if you're going to want me to say this, it wasn't Sandler.
That's quite all right.
I want to say Carnegie?
Dale Carnegie?
Yeah. So a lot of gems that I got out of that and started to see sales in a different light. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, you know, as a small business owner, doesn't matter what your role is, you're selling, right? Mm-hmm. So when I started my first company, it was a Salesforce consulting practice. I was absolutely selling every single day. And that really, I mean, the idea for Serious Insight sprang out of just personal frustration and challenge with, you know, all the tools that I was trying to use and piece together, and spending way too much of my day trying to use all those tools. And so, you know, that came out of my direct kind of sales experience there. But you know, these days I spend a lot of time talking to customers and trying to understand what kind of challenges they're going through in their experience of sales today. So
what are you finding?
You know, I don't think any of this will be particularly surprising, but we all, sales especially, have to do more with almost less time available. So, you know, whether it's higher quotas, more phone calls that we have to make, spend more time getting customers through a buying cycle, you name it. At every stage in the sales process, I think the stakes have been raised across the board. And so, you know, the things that we're working on today are trying to help other aspects of companies' sales teams. So, you know, the term SDR or BDR, basically those sales reps that are in charge of that top of the funnel area.
Tell me about SDR.
They're on the phones all day, right? So their quotas are tied to how many calls are you making, how many customers are you connecting with, how many demos are you scheduling, things along those lines, and then handing it off to the closers, right? So getting that person from really kind of cold lead to warm interest and then handing it off to their formal sales team. And so we're trying to build tools that help connect those two teams and trying to build tools that help make those SDRs as efficient as they possibly can while, and I think this is important, while not losing the authenticity of being a human being. And I think, you know, there's a lot of tools out there today that just, you know, help you get hundreds of emails out the door, and they try with a rather veiled attempt at appearing to be non-automated. So that's the challenge I think we collectively have, both on the receiving side of those emails and of those phone calls, as well as on the sending side. And just trying to connect more genuinely with more customers.
Well, it seems to me there's a big difference between the push and the pull. push being we're going to send out a lot. We're going to have a big megaphone,
right?
Whether it's email or Twitter or LinkedIn or Facebook,
right.
But we're going to put a lot of stuff out there.
Right, is the volume game.
That's right. That's a model for pushing, and it's certainly important. The other side would be the pull model, which would be to let people find
the inbound marketing.
And it's certainly inbound marketing, and it's also what I'm finding. It's Facebook ads, and Facebook has worked so hard to be very, very selective about where they deliver the message, mm-hmm. and to be able to do that efficiently, effectively, mm-hmm. and with some good returns on your investment. But to be attractive. I found HubSpot does a lot of work doing that. I'm not convinced that they are the answer to the problem.
Yeah.
But it really is an ongoing issue about what kind of energy and effort we're going to put into that megaphone being out there, pushing out, and how much we put into being attractive to people.
Yeah.
So how are you guys dealing with that in your company?
So we have a few people in Knoxville whose responsibility it is to personally manage our social channels, our email campaigns, our what we call content marketing, right? Just the blogging. We've always been, I would say, prolific with respect to the amount of content on the blog. But in this last year, we've focused more on the quality and really trying to get those pieces out there that try to establish us as thought leaders in the sales space. So to your listeners, I would encourage you to go take a look at our blog and see if there's stuff there that you can learn from. We definitely get a lot of interest from those outreach efforts. I would say personally, we've had limited success with paid ads, both on Google and Facebook and others, but I personally have certainly seen others be very successful there. So, you know, I don't know if it's just we haven't found the right mix or if our space is particularly different for some reason, but we're still trying to figure that out.
Good. I think we're all trying to figure it out. In the moment that we know what's going on, that's the time we simply close the blinds,
right?
Because it changes so quickly. And
that's very true.
And I don't think it's going to stop. I think that, we either decide that it's going to keep changing, we have to keep listening and talking and learning, or we've decided to begin denying that there's any change out there, which is the beginning of stagnation.
That's atrophy.
Yeah, atrophy is another word for it. Well, Ryan, this has been wonderful. I've certainly enjoyed getting re-engagement with you, even though every day I use Cirrus Insight to my benefit, and I look forward to seeing what's next. I've heard hints along the way that you've got something coming up, and I would imagine, knowing a little bit about how Salesforce.com cycles run, that you are right now in a big push to get ready for Dreamforce.
That's right, October 4th through 7th.
And
so
I'm looking forward to seeing what. Well, in fact, I'm in your beta right now for Cirrus 5.
Yeah.
And I sent some information over to Brandon today about
good.
The kind of things that I'm looking for right
good.
Now. So tell us a little bit about how we can get in touch with you. Tell us a little bit about you mentioned people might find your blogs and your website interesting. Tell us a little bit how to get in touch with you.
Sure. So easiest way is on the website, cirrusinsight.com, and of course I'll have to spell that out, C-I-R-R-U-S, like the cloud, insight, I-N-S-I-G-H-T.com. Again, we build a tool for salespeople who are using salesforce.com that brings a lot of the sales tools that sales teams need to your inbox. So you save that time hours a week from having to switch back and forth and learn new tools, and we package it all up in one.
Excellent, excellent. So if someone wanted to talk to you directly, what could they do?
You can certainly email me. My email is my first initial last name, R Huff, H-U-F-F, as in Huff and Puff, @cirruspath.com, C-I-R-R-U-S, P PATH.com.
Excellent. So if there was one thing that you could leave, a book, an insight, a direction to a young entrepreneur getting ready to start their business or in the midst of making a pivot in their business, what would you give them?
That's tough. I think one of the most important things I've learned is really seek out those mentors and find folks that have gone through similar challenges and learn as much as you can from them. And the trick there, I think, is to listen to their advice, but translate it into a solution for your own problem. I think a lot of times, myself included, advice is cheap. I'll offer that frequently. The trick, and I think the sign of a successful entrepreneur, is what you do with that advice and how well you translate that advice into something actionable in your given situation.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for being with us, Ryan. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you, Will. I really appreciate it.
And look forward to the next 5 years, and we get back together again.
There you go. Maybe sooner.
So that's been wonderful. We've certainly enjoyed having Ryan with us on the Pilgrim on the 405, and we look forward to next week when we'll be having one of Orange County's CPAs talking to us about how to thrive in California.
Been listening to The Pilgrim on the 405 with Will Christ. To hear more of the programs in this podcast, go to www.willchrist.com.